Hello, viewers. So I've got a decent appearance, uncharacteristically, and it's not just out of respect for the late John Bruton of a happy and glorious memory, the dearly lamented John Bruton, because I just found out that our erstwhile Taoiseach has been called to his reward to the great big Doyle in the sky. So remember, when I first became sort of aware of what was going on in politics and the Republic of Ireland in the early 90s, he was Fine Gael leader, then in opposition, because it was the sort of end of the Charlie Hawkey era. Albert Reynolds took over as leader for a little while. So he's passed away, John Bruton, that is, in the Mater Hospital in Dublin, as to say, Mother of God, Mater. I remember reading, was it James Joyce's little sister? You think it was called The Mater, as in you went there, there's something the matter with you, rather than sort of Mater Misericordia, the Mother of Loving Kindness. So anyway, he's been effusively praised, but such are usually the exequies when a superannuated statesman is summoned to the debating chamber yonder. So then he was Taoiseach, as in Prime Minister. Now, incidentally, I'm no Gael Gore, as you may have deduced, of the Republic from 1994 to 97. So he did so much to help achieve peace in Northern Ireland. And Fine Gael, as in Irish family, was the more moderate of the two major parties in the Republic of Ireland. People often said we had civil war politics for almost a century because Sinn Féin split in 1922 with regards to the Anglo-Irish Treaty. And Fine Gael inherits the tradition of Michael Collins and those who said, yes, we must signal our acceptance of this treaty with the United Kingdom and permit Northern Ireland to remain in the United Kingdom, at least temporarily. Trouble is, these temporary solutions have a habit of becoming permanent. And here we are over 100 years later, and there's little sign that partition's going to end. But John Bruton actually looked back before that troubled times of the early 20th century to the Irish Home Rule Party, and he really felt that he was carrying the baton from them onwards, and had portraits of Irish Parliamentary Party politicians up in his office and so forth, felt that Irish history had taken the wrong turn around the time of the Easter Rising. However, he had to say the cupola fuckle and doff the cap to the Republican militant tradition with regard to things. I remember in 1997, going to the commemoration of the 75th anniversary of the assassination of Michael Collins, not that he was hailing that event, but you know, rather he was mourning it. And he was there, the Fine Gael leader always there, lays a wreath. Dr. Varadkar has done so in recent years, especially on the centenary of Collins's death. I got to press the flesh with him. And I ran into him in Vienna way in 2003, just by chance, when he was a European commissioner. So John Bruton, he was one of the most illustrious, remarkable, and honest politicians in Ireland. But sadly, we don't see his like very often. And he was up against some of the most low down, dirty, loathsome, imbecilic, mutton-minded politicians and Fianna Fáil on the other side. Not all Fianna Fáilers are bad, but people like Bertie Ahern. I mean, we're supposed to have the gift of the gab, but Bertie Ahern certainly didn't kiss the Blarney Stone. Or Albert Reynolds had always talked to his toes, who were just woeful public speakers. It's staggering that they got so far in politics, people who are completely unintellectual, whereas John Bruton was way worthier, a far finer representative of our country, but sadly didn't hold office for that long. But let's see what his achievements were. So he came from Meath, if I got that right. He'd studied University College Dublin and the King's Inns. He'd been called to the bar, but been elected very early. I remember years ago, he said in politics, what he wanted to achieve was the greatest happiness of the greatest number. I thought, where have I heard that before? So that's Jeremy Bentham. All right, nothing wrong with quoting somebody else. So he presided over this highly fissile rainbow coalition of several different parties. Obviously, not just his own one, the Labour Party, and I think the Progressive Democrats were there. Progressive Democrats were some people who'd split off Fianna Fáil in the 80s. They were said to be Fianna Fáil people who couldn't abide Charlie Hawkey, his endless dishonesties, or would I say his chicanery, his financial skullduggery. It all came out in the wash when he died because people were too afraid of libel suits him being a Gombeen man and all that. Ooh, somebody got sued to Kingdom Come for that one. Des O'Malley was the one who led that faction out of Fianna Fáil, a chap from Limerick, from a well-known solicitor's family. But Des O'Malley, unfortunately, he died over a decade ago. And the Progressive Democrats, then they dissolved about 20 years ago now. He did so much to bring peace and believed in fulsome security cooperation with the United Kingdom. And he would be outspoken in condemning IRA terrorism, as well as those of loyalist terrorist organizations. So he had good chemistry with the, at the time, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, John Major. Sir John is now as he is. So Sir John is one of those who's led the tributes in the UK. So he was only 22 when he was elected to Sir Doyle Aaron. So in that sense, he's hardly a man of the people. For almost his whole adult life, he was a public representative. So yeah, he was Taoiseach for a while, but anyway, he lost the 1997 election, despite having presided over very healthy economic growth. And that was the Celtic Tiger first came out. And is to some extent down to his policies. Another thing is he was a fervent Euro-nationalist, believed in leading the Republic of Ireland into the European Union. The referendum on scrapping the Irish pound, which I regret, was passed the year after he left office, but he'd done all the spade work for it and definitely believed in total commitment to the European project, saw it as a way to supervene what he thought were petty divisions between Irish and British in Northern Ireland, to embrace a shared European future. So he bowed out of frontline politics in 2001. The price of failure for him was high, being appointed ambassador to the United States and latterly taking up a post at the European Union. I remember after he left office as leader of the party, he'd said that the Fine Gael was not Fianna Fáil was the national party and Fine Gael was the international party. And also under him, there were various other changes were brought in. Divorce was legalized. Homosexual acts were decriminalized and so forth. There was a greater right to contraception and indeed pornography. Although abortion in almost all circumstances was illegal because we wanted to protect the right to life of all our children, people were allowed to get information about going abroad to do this to their children. So perhaps the one of the few black marks against his name. He was a well-known figure on the world stage, and even his most implacable foes in politics didn't find much that was bad to say about him. So he was well respected really across the political spectrum, and he had a good working relationship with unionists as well. He invited the then Prince of Wales, who's now King Charles, to visit the Republic of Ireland, the first visit by a senior member of the royal family to Ireland in well over 70 years. And of course, mustn't forget that Prince Charles's great uncle, Lord Mountbatten, had been assassinated only 16 years earlier. And so Lord Mountbatten was the grandfather that Prince Charles never had, remembering that Lord Mountbatten was his grandmother's brother. And he fulfilled that grandfatherly role in Prince Charles's life, because one of his grandfathers had died before Prince Charles was born. His other grandfather, King George VI, died when Prince Charles was only four. So that's why Lord Mountbatten was so important to him, as a sign of healing wounds. But now some Republicans said, Bruton, he disgraced himself by his kowtowing to the prince, the power of prince. He's such a lickspittle. Let's not forget Bloody Sunday. And Prince Charles, he was like colonel-in-chief of the parachute regiment that killed those 14 civilians and things like that. But he did so much by signing the framework agreement with John Major, and that really paved the way for the Good Friday Agreement 3 years later. So a truly honourable person who was in politics for the right reasons, was devoid of vanity, was personally unambitious, wanted to achieve the most for the Republic of Ireland and indeed Northern Ireland, and achieved a great deal. But unfortunately, things that worked out against him. He wasn't in the office for as long as he deserved. So yeah, I'm really sad to see him go. I think he did die today. I just got the news. George VI was Charles III's grandfather. Did I misspeak? No, obviously he wanted Northern Ireland to join the Republic of Ireland by consent, but obviously he thought that they couldn't be bombed in and shouldn't be bombed into doing that. Some sort of shared future, that Northern Ireland could still have some sort of closer relationship with Great Britain than the rest of it, that there had to be a via media between nationalism and unionism, was all for like a British-Irish council, things like that. That maybe home rule within the United Kingdom might have satisfied him. Obviously, that ship had sailed you know, over 20 years before before John Bruton was born. So anyway, he responded sharply to crimes by the IRA and its loyalist mirror images. So thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal with the greatest possible generosity. georgecallahan79@gmail.com on PayPal. Okay, goodbye, everybody. Toodaloo. Okay, slán a bhfuil.